Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Report. As always, I'm your host Matt, and I interview WordPress entrepreneurs, people who are making a living using WordPress software, designers, developers, entrepreneurs, people who are starting SaaS businesses, digital downloads, all that fun stuff. This isn't just a geek session. This isn't just let's talk about CSS and PHP. We're talking about real world stories of people running businesses and how they do it so they can help us in our own WordPress businesses. So today I'm joined by Paul Goodchild. Paul, good to have you. And did it cut out?
Yeah, it cut out for a second.
Okay.
I think it's back.
There it is. All right, so Paul, good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Delighted to be here.
Awesome, awesome. So give the folks a two-minute drill of what you do, who you are, and what you do with WordPress.
Basically, I'm a developer and a writer from Northern Ireland originally. It's hard to know where to start, but basically I'll start from now and go backwards. But basically, myself and my brother, we've launched a product just short of a year ago, which it helps people manage their WordPress sites in bulk and allows people to perform lots of different tasks from one central location so that they can manage all their WordPress sites and make that life a bit easier. First, got introduced to WordPress probably about 4 or 5 years ago now. Back in 2008, I think I started my own blog and I started a couple of other sites, just kind of seeing what all the buzz was about, what was going on with WordPress. And since then, just continued writing, getting into WordPress, and creating some WordPress sites for clients and things like that.
Awesome.
And before that, ultimately, my background was a developer. I was a Java developer.
Nice.
So that's really my core background. Just working in that, really. And I've since really moved away from that. And now I'm basically focused on WordPress and WordBit and
awesome.
Trying to get that developed.
Awesome. So I'm gonna start from the top and work my way down. I usually go the other way. I'm just going to go right at it. Why another WordPress management software? I saw, and let me give people the preface to this. I saw in the Twitter streams and how kind of we got connected was somebody said, "Oh my God, another WordPress management piece of software." And you chimed in with your, with your reasoning. So tell the world why another one and why are you different?
Why we're different, I'll come to that in a minute. That's
sure.
A bigger question. But why another one? Well, we're all aware of ManageWP. It was really the first one to really push this product or this service. We actually had myself and my brother, we had this idea actually before ManageWP launched, and that was, they launched their beta about just over two years ago, in December, I think it was. I remember the month. And we were sitting talking about how we're going to manage our own websites and their clients' websites better. And we thought we need to build something for this. And about, I'd say 2 weeks later, ManageWP launched a beta of ManageWP. And it was great. It was the first thing out in the market like that. But and we knew by the response of the market to that, and I loved it, and everybody that went near it loved it, that there was a real need for that and a real market for there. So we didn't actually get started on that straight away, but it wasn't long and we started creating other little services and other things that got us to the point where we could release WordPress. But we believe there's huge scope for this market in not only in managing WordPress sites, but doing everything that's related to managing sites. So you've got your hosting, you've got your domains, and you've got, there's so much more that goes into managing a website from a client's perspective or a developer's perspective. That's just much more than just updating your plugins and keeping your theme up to date and your WordPress core every time there's an update. Because they're obviously very important and they're one of the biggest use cases for this, for a service like this. But we feel that there's so much more scope for a service like this to go beyond what's currently there at the moment. And we're making headway into that at the moment. And what makes us different? one was two things. One, we ManageWP obviously was the first one there, and a couple of other people have come along and used, for example, their plugin, for example, to create an alternative service, which is different and better and works in different ways. We decided to go it alone, and we created a totally different system altogether for connecting the sites. So in ours, you would add your sites differently. This is cosmetic differences, but I'll get into the meat of it in a minute. But our plugin basically doesn't in itself do a whole lot. It stands as a receiver for anything that we send it. So we can send it. You can update this plugin, or you update this theme, but we can also send it whatever we want. We can tell it. We can send or create our own custom packages on our server, package them up and send them to the sites, which makes it a lot more flexible in how and in what it can do. So what makes us different is our plugin is unique. It's only unique to Warpit. People can download the plugin and they can extend it because it's got great tech within it. But the actual functionality that moves Warpit comes from the service itself. So if there's a bug, for example, within our code, we can change it centrally, and that is immediately reflected on every package that you ever send out. So we don't need to go around updating people's plugins and things like that. So it's different based on its core technology. It's just different. It uses a package sender feature that my brother's developed. It's really clever stuff. I wish I understood it. but he's the core developer, and he's created that magic. But for users, the main difference for us is that we have done away with this idea of having tiers. So you don't, it's very common, most web services do it, where you have a service and you have a standard and a business and a pro and a gold and a platinum and everything else. We don't do that. We basically say, you can sign up. We've actually just released a huge new release yesterday, so you can have a trial of the product. Sign up for the trial if you like it. Then you can subscribe for premium sites or premium service, which allows you to add as many sites as you want then. And every site that you add, you pay a little small fee for that. And you don't pay for 50 sites, you don't pay for 10, you just pay for exactly what you have.
Right.
And all the features of Warpit, basically, fundamentally, are available to you. We only have one premium service at the moment, and that's the backup system, mm-hmm. which we could talk about later. But all the services are available. You don't have a premium tier and all this stuff. And if we do release services which are premium, they will always be available to you. You don't have to pay a huge price every month just for the ability to clone your site. If you want to clone a site, you just clone it.
Right.
It's basically making it fully accessible and fully pay-as-you-go without tiers and without complexity like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awesome answer, and it sounds like a very interesting business model, and that's what I want to talk about next.
Yeah.
What is the... I love the difference that you set apart from the rest. It's definitely intriguing, and it's definitely an interesting... It's just you're not your typical WordPress... Here's a plugin. Plugin needs an update. Download the update. If you don't get that update, then you're screwed in some sense for whatever might happen down the road. So I do like that business model, and it's good to see other entrepreneurs breaking the mold from that stuff.
Cool.
So what is the base price of Warpit, and did you have a strategy to come up with pricing?
I mean, I can answer how much it is very quickly, but as we released the whole new upgrade to the system yesterday, the new functionality, we've increased our base price. It was sitting at like 32 cents a site, which is practically free. And we've increased that to 60 cents a site, but with the trial system, you sign up to the trial. If you subscribe to the core service and you start paying money, if you do that within 7 days, for example, you get 40% off. So it's effectively the same price as what it was. But it's also just to let people see the full system. And if they like the system, then they can get straight into it. And there's a lot of people that would come on and they look at it and they're like, well, I'm using this already, so I don't really care. And that's fine, because you can't push people away from what they already have. And if it's working for them, that's great. But this system... if you get in early, you get a great price. You get basically the price we were flogging it at. I mean, it's a great price, but it's not free.
Yeah, I think that I look at that price and I'm like, wow, 32 cents. How do you even charge somebody 32 cents? Like,
exactly.
I would think that like there was some like minimum that you'd have to have on a charge.
We basically did it so that you have a 5-site minimum. It's because otherwise, if you did it on a per site basis, you lose all your all the incoming money on fees for the payment.
Yep.
And we also don't, like, let's say you have five sites and you want to add an extra site, so you're six sites, you don't just pay an extra, what, 36 cents. That then gets pro rata calculated until the end of the month, so you would never pay the full month's price, although it's pittance mm-hmm. at that point. And it just gets added on to the very end, so that at the beginning of the month, of the next month, they all get collected together and then charged. Mm-hmm. So we're not charging there and then at the point. Mm-hmm. So you can add and remove sites and whatever, and the system will automatically balance and calculate all that out mm-hmm. without charging your card. You'll only just get one charge, say, at the beginning of the month.
So it's roughly coming to a couple bucks a month for your average customer?
For a five-site customer, it's $1.60.
Okay.
Basically at the moment. Yeah. Which, not a whole lot.
Yeah, not a whole lot at all. How did you come up with that? Did you say, look, we're just gonna cut out any kind of competition, make it like an iTunes charge, like you're just buying a song or a small app. Somebody's familiar with that kind of price range. Yeah. Was there a particular strategy that maybe you came up with for that?
We've thought a lot about pricing and we've jumped around different things, but one thing that stayed with us, we had a hosting service, we still have it, it's going back nearly 10 years now, but we've always maintained really low prices because our basic aim is to automate whatever we can whenever we can, which means that you don't need a person sitting in the computer or anything to do that. So if we can automate it and get things working, which I can tell you it's pretty difficult with all the hosting configurations out there, but if we can do that, we don't need then to charge silly prices to people. And we want our product to be as accessible to the person who has five sites and have all those features that we will eventually bring in and already have to them, to the same people that manage huge numbers of websites, hundreds of websites. We want those same features, and we don't believe that it's fair that if you've got five sites, you should be paying more per site than the person who has 500 sites. Why should they get a huge big discount because they've got so many sites? Why not make that same price available to everybody and price it at a level that if you've got 500 sites, you pay a fair price for that. And if you've got five, you pay the same price. We don't really believe too much in the whole scaling. When you pay more, you get a reduced price. We don't really like that. If we can afford as a service to give away 500 sites at a cheaper price, then why can't we afford to give those same prices to people with less sites?
Right.
So we just kind of that's the basic underlying methodology in the pricing, which is fair and equitable to all. There's no special reward if you've got more sites.
Yeah,
and some people with more sites might have a problem with that, and then we can work that out with them.
So you'll grow your revenue once the person is, let's say, another hosting company picks up Warpit, your revenue really will grow, and your margins are probably much, much higher at the top. Versus where you are if somebody's just got the five sites. Definitely an interesting strategy. Definitely. I was just going to say that I was going to transition into then. How do you intend on supporting the super large that might have 1,000 sites versus the person who's just got five sites? Are you automating those systems too? Is there a different level of support that you might introduce with somebody that has 1,000 sites?
No, the people with 1,000 sites, they will ultimately use the same functionality. So it's as automated as we can make it. When people come in with a lot of sites, it points to maybe holes or points to maybe things that we can improve to automate things. So they just help us refine the system, basically, and that's been going on since the very beginning. And usually with people with a lot of sites have very disparate hosting configurations, and they allow us then to accommodate the system towards all those. And once we find one system, like Media Temple, which is particularly tricky, once we find one and we get connected to that and that works for all Media Temple, for example, or we get the numbers of configurations is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But each one that comes along and each one that we connect with, more and more, it's a success the first time around, but sometimes there's a little tweak and we can make a change to that, and that's global to everybody because we don't need to update the plugin because, as I mentioned earlier, everything comes from the central central
server. Is there a hosting provider that's just impossible to work with, like a GoDaddy?
GoDaddy's pretty horrific. Yeah. It's definitely one of the most challenging, and that's most, actually, at the moment, I can't name you a hosting company that we have a particular problem with the WarpIt product. Definitely the biggest challenge at the moment for us is the backup system that we're running. That's definitely the biggest challenge, but we're, again, because it's all centralized, every time we meet a new hosting provider that's got a slightly different quirk, we can work around that or find out what it is we need to do, and then that backup then just works for all hosts on that type of host.
Nice.
But it's tricky. It's a lot of manual work, but as we do all the manual work, it gets more automated.
Yep. Let's continue on a little bit more about the business. So you start at a really low price in the hopes to scale, yeah, in the hopes to scale to a bigger, let's say, hosting provider. I heard so far it's you and your brother on the team. Do you have any plans to add more people to the team? Do you already have a virtual team in place that's already kind of running and supporting you and helping you develop?
We've made two attempts in the past at bringing on developers remotely, and they've failed miserably, but unfortunately it was more down to our due diligence in basically their capabilities, and they oversold themselves, unfortunately.
I've heard this before and experienced it before, where you've been oversold a bill of goods, thinking that they are the quote-unquote rock star PHP ninja. Tell us about that. How are you going to rectify that? How are you going to do your due diligence moving forward?
Well, basically, we've taken on two at two different times, one shortly after the other. And the first one, it went on for quite a while until we really just decided that it just wasn't really going to be. And we thought, okay, right, we'll do this a bit differently next time, and we'll create effectively a test for them to do. And we did that, and at the start, again, that seemed to go fine, but we've learned basically that the complexity of our system, I think, scares people. And because, like I said, I'm not the core developer here, but I do develop on the system, but there's some things I just don't go near because it is very complex. And we made the mistake, I think, of overwhelming the people that came to work for us, and that's a real... As I learn more about what it would take to take on someone, that's a real problem that you can is overwhelm, and the level of technology in it is a little bit complex. So we've thought about who would bring on, or the type of person that we need to bring on, and how we would bring them into it. And it would probably start with me, in that, given that I would get overwhelmed if I went into the system, then I know a little bit better about how I can ease them into the system.
Yeah,
and get them working on higher level or more user-facing parts of the system, as opposed to dig into the core.
Yeah, and this is the entrepreneur's, or one of the entrepreneur's roadblocks, right? Because it's just the two of you. You don't have time to sit down and properly go through every line of code and every section or function, let alone have them understand like how the customers are coming in, how they're interacting with the front end. So we like to think, because we're that way, we like to think, well, just jump into the fire and just get in there, start going.
It doesn't work.
You know, so some crazy ideas that I've always thought of, but again, it goes back to the entrepreneur thing. If you're trying to build a business, do you have the cash flow to just bring somebody in to help you document and systemize this chaos that we live in? You know, is it worth it to do something like that? That's yet to be answered in my world anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically coming to the point where we feel we need to. We can't really scale at this point. The growth and our ability to develop a system and also support the customers is being challenged at the moment. So we're rushing to it at the moment. We're really getting ready for that. And in order to do that, like, I listen to quite a number of different podcasts. One of my favorite is the Lifestyle Business Podcast. I don't know if you're aware of Dan and Ian.
That one I haven't heard of.
That's imperative listening for any entrepreneur, I think. I just think they're great guys. And one thing that they really stress is documenting everything that you do. Because, I mean, they've been taking on staff for years, And that's what really what we've started to do right now is document everything, document all our processes and document the system itself so that we have something that we can fall back on. And if they have a question, we hand it to them and we can show them this is what we do to do this. This is how the system's roughly built. So that takes a little bit less time on our part to introduce that person, because that's something that we really lost was the time invested to bring on those people in the past that didn't make the cut, basically, and all that investment of time that could have been spent developing the product was lost. Yeah. And now we're basically going at it from a different angle, which is getting ourselves ready so that we are very clear about what we are and what we're doing and how things work, so that it's easy to pass that on to someone and that it's easy for them, so they're not left just in this sea of information for which they have no investment. They're not, for us as the entrepreneur, we're deeply invested in, and we'll do whatever it takes to learn whatever it takes
to
do it right, and they just need a little bit more guidance at the start.
Yeah. So. Do you think it's for your next hire, do you think you're going to find somebody who's invested in the product, be it through money they might invest in the company, or just a better way to vet them to say that, yeah, they are committed to this and they want to see this succeed?
Yeah, it's that we won't be looking for an investor in that regard. We've thought about that, and we wouldn't rule it out necessarily, but we just need a really good developer, I think, at this point. And we have actually approached one or two people, but they've got their own projects. Generally, really good developers have their own entrepreneurial aspirations, and they don't want to be moving away from that.
Yes.
We just got to find a really good developer who's prepared to sink their teeth into it.
Yep.
And we'll just vet them just based on references and their experience. And all you can do is do your best and hope that they'll do their best. There's no right answer to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. The good news is you're starting to feel the growing pains, for lack of a better word. So it's a good thing. It's better than just hearing crickets. At least you're hearing people say,
absolutely,
I need help.
It's a great sign.
How did you get to this point? Any strategies or tactics you can share with marketing the product or being out there on the web?
As the non main core developer, that's really my role. Is I'm the front man, and I think the single biggest factor, I would say, in getting us to where we are, the product does its own marketing in itself, is the customer support. It's always on, basically, and our testimonials show that people can see our enthusiasm for the product, and we're not a fly by night. And we're here, and we might be yet another WordPress management system, but we're here for the long haul, and we've got a great product. And basically, any problem, if you're 5 sites or 50, we do whatever it takes to fix it and get it up to speed and up to working. Because, like I said before, if they're on a particular host that has a problem, they're probably not the only ones. So if we can fix it for them and make it work genius for them, then it's going to work genius for the next person that comes along in the same hosting. So we've got no advantage to favoritism over somebody's got 50 and somebody's got 5. So we just put all that we can in to supporting the customer, and that's probably the biggest thing. But the whole marketing and strategy stuff is still something that I'm still trying to work out. I'm trying to get the best path to, and we've experimented with pricing and experiment like Google experiments and things like that, and we're running them at the moment, and I've seen some really, really amazing results actually out of experiments. I really highly recommend that anybody in this sort of web app sphere and testing their funnel should do Google experiments or should do some sort of testing, A/B testing of their system, because you'll be amazed at what you see.
Yeah, and that's Google experiments built into Google Analytics, so
yeah,
that you can kind of track that funnel.
Yeah, it's too easy to use, really. I mean, once you get used to it the first time, you set up your first experiment and you work it out, could take the better part of a day, depending on your experience with Google Analytics. Mm-hmm. But once you've done the first one, I mean, I set up a new one today because we've changed the system quite a bit and introduced the 30-day trial, things like that. So, I mean, it took me half an hour to set up a brand new experiment with different content, things like that. I highly recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
as a way to really finely tune your funnel, basically, and see what people like and what pushes them towards your product.
Sure. And so the folks that don't know, you're doing some A-B testing, showing, you know, piece of content A, piece of content B, price A, price B. Let's see which one the visitors are clicking on more. Do you do that a lot with content, or do you do that a lot with price?
We actually never A/B test the price.
Okay.
Because no, we don't charge one price for one person at one point, because they happen to sign up on one page. So at any given time, the price is always consistent for everybody. We would effectively be running price tests now because we've just raised their prices. So we would be able to see if there is a general change in uptake from that. But we don't A/B test prices. What we do A/B test is, for example, just the layout of the pricing page. We had one on there up until today where it was just, I just did a redesign on a pricing page and laid out the benefits a bit better and just tested that. And then there's the front page, the headline, and what the content of the front page and the ordering of that is being tested at the moment. So it's just more testing the impact of headlines at the moment and core content and some of the layout and some of the flow of the pages to see what changes. And there are usually remarkable changes.
Are you doing any live analytics? Like, so you're making these changes, you're pushing them live, and then you're actually seeing somebody sign up from that change, like within minutes, hours?
Well, I've only did actually half an hour before this call. I put in the new test, so I haven't seen any results from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, immediately the landing page that you get to after you sign up is always the same. So we have that as a goal, and you need the goal in Google Analytics in order to do content experiments. So we can see immediately which landing page on the front page they signed up, or which one they landed on for to then sign up. So we will know which page they looked at. So you can basically track anything, basically. Yeah.
What's that feeling like when you make a change and then you see a sign up and you're just like, hell yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's really nice. Like I did a landing page test. We had this landing page that we'd had for months. This was actually my first A/B test. And we got over 100% increase in conversion to sign up when I changed that page.
Nice.
And I changed it to a page that I thought would actually perform a lot worse, just based on another article I read. It was a long, flowing letter kind of sign-up page. I thought, I mean, who reads that anymore? Because when I see those, I'm normally switched right off. I'm not interested. But that performed over 100% better.
Wow.
And it just blows your mind. And you think that of all those people that have come and gone, you could have doubled your conversion rate to sign up. And that's just obviously to sign up for free. But it's an incredible statistic, and it's one not worth missing out on.
That's amazing. The client signs up, they get introduced to the product. Is there one roadblock that you hit a lot more times out of none that the client just can't figure out how to install the plugin? Is there a common, frequently asked question that you battle with new clients?
Generally, it's when they add their site for the first time. I think there is, with the new interface that we released yesterday, I've tried to offset that, where they're adding, very often I see people adding a domain or attempting to add a site and the URL doesn't even exist. It's almost as if but they don't often contact us. Some people do, and then I can tell them. But they're trying to add a site that doesn't even exist, that's like almost like they want to buy a URL and put WordPress on that, and that happens actually quite frequently. So we're wondering how we can then bring in, it's like I said, WordPress, there's so much more to managing your WordPress sites than just managing your plugin and updates. It's your whole hosting.
Yep.
So one thing that we're thinking of bringing in to WordPress is the whole idea of integrated, get a domain, get your hosting, install WordPress, install this template. That's a long way off, but it's one thing that we've thought about from the beginning. And we think, from what we're seeing from some of the troubles people have, is that that's actually what they're looking to do, is they're adding a site that they haven't actually purchased yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. One other thing is probably the biggest problem once you've added a site is, and Plesk hosting has this problem a lot, where WordPress does not have file write permissions. So, like, I don't know if you've ever had it where you have a WordPress site and you go to update a plugin or update something and then it prompts you with your FTP details. That is basically WordPress itself doesn't have permission to write to the disk. And this happens most often in Plesk web posting. And we know the way around that, and we're working on getting that in, but that's probably the biggest problem. And people think that because WordPress just leverages the WordPress system, if WordPress itself doesn't have write permissions, then WordPress won't have it either. We can't bypass the security of that. So we're working to make it a bit easier for people to update their systems without having to put in their FTP details into WordPress. They can centrally manage it from within WordPress. So that's probably the biggest problem that we have. But that's, unfortunately, it's not a WordPress problem, but it's something that we can solve.
Definitely, definitely an interesting problem to fix. That's when you're going to need that team of developers to come in.
Yeah. I mean, half the problem is UI work. And like, we can code the back end to do stuff, but it's getting the interface flowing and working and making it really easy for the user. That's really where our bottleneck is.
Real quick, you bring up a good point on UI. How many iterations of UI have you gone through since day one?
Oh, a lot. We kicked off with the Twitter Bootstrap UI. That was really useful for getting started. Highly recommend that. Yep. There's so many ways you can take that. And that was fine, and that got us off and going. And we really basically just iterated that. We didn't do any crazy designs with that. We just improved it and improved the tabs and on the pages and stuff like that, and slight design. Got rid of junk that was there that we thought, oh, we need to fill some space, and we added in this and that. We got rid of that. But yesterday, actually, we released our by far our biggest update, which is, it's just a brand new UI. And that's the biggest iteration, that's the biggest change by far and away. It's completely Ajax, and it loads each page as you need it, so you don't reload pages, you don't go back and forward between pages and have to wait for the reloads. It loads it all in the background. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's a really great change in our UI. But UI is probably our weakest point, I'd have to say, and that's really who we need to bring on to really push that ahead. Because neither of us are designers, but we can code what we need to code. But to make it look pretty and make it flow, that's the challenge for us at the moment.
It is. There's a lot of people, especially in client services, the clients themselves, they don't really put a lot of attention into design, or they don't think that, I don't really need to have this great, amazing website. They don't realize that design is everything.
Yeah.
Because then once they get their new site, they say, what is this? I wanted something that looked like Apple or Mercedes-Benz or something, and it's just like, well, you should have put more attention to detail.
Yeah. It's just not that easy.
Yeah. No. Real quick, let's talk about WordPress as a community. Do you attend WordCamps, WordPress meetups? How do you stay involved with WordPress?
We haven't actually gone into any WordCamps. We were talking to people about the, because we're based in Europe, about going to WordCamp in Edinburgh. And there was one, I think, in the end of April. We couldn't make it to that, basically, with this new release coming up. But my guess is that we'll start to attend more of them coming forward. Mm-hmm. But we haven't been to any yet.
Yep.
But there's a few things that we would like to talk about. But and going forward, probably we would like to do that. But as yet, no, we haven't.
Do you tap into the community through, like, WordPress.org? Do you spend any time on the forums over there?
Yeah, I have a look now again. I spend most of my time on LinkedIn. Yep. There's lots of WordPress support groups in LinkedIn that I spend most of my time on there and contribute where I can on that.
Yeah. Google Plus Communities is actually pretty nice too. That's a place where I've been spending a little bit of time in the WordPress community over there.
Uh-huh.
I find that a little bit cleaner and easier than your typical LinkedIn group.
A bit messy. Yeah,
Those seem very messy sometimes, too much spam and all that fun stuff.
Yep.
Well, awesome, Paul. This has been a great, great interview as far as teaching us about your product, teaching us from launching the product to running the business to doing a two-man shop, working out of the garage.
Yeah, basically.
trying to build it out. The Google experiments and funneling, I think everyone will get some awesome information. If they haven't, they weren't listening well enough, go back, hit replay, and listen to what Paul has to say. Quick pause for the cause. If you want more of these awesome interviews, mattreport.com and mattreport.com/subscribe to join the mailing list. We'll jump into the last two segments of the show. Next segment is, what's in your toolbox? What piece of software or hardware do you need on a day-to-day basis to run the business and to keep Warp It up and running?
There's no one tool in there. If I had to pick one for the browser, it'd be LastPass. If you're not saving your passwords with LastPass, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. We just could not keep everything organized without it.
Yep.
Just in terms of Warp It, we've just subscribed to Freshdesk.
Okay.
I don't know if you're aware of it, the support system. We were using desk.com since the beginning. So I'm sure you've heard of that. They were bought by Salesforce.
Yep.
It's a great system, but I'm sold. If you need, and they've got a free system basically if you've up to three agents. Freshdesk for help desk support and integrate single sign-on, which we've integrated into Warp It, and ticketing, and I signed up to them about 2 weeks ago to try them out for preparation for this, but in order to keep track of customer support, which is something that's really important to us, Freshdesk.com is, I'm not in any way affiliated and running again, but I just think they're great. I just think they've really turned our support system around.
Yep.
It's just been great.
Yeah, we've been using Zendesk, and everyone loves Zendesk. I just find it a little long in the tooth. It just seems so old and I don't know. I just, the support email address gets a lot of spam, and it's just a pain to manage the spam. And I used desk.com at one point, but it was just that one free agent that was decent. But no, I'll definitely check out Freshdesk.
Highly recommend it.
Nice. Let's jump into the lightning round, where I'll ask you a series of quick questions and you have a series of quick answers.
All right, hit me.
The one plugin you cannot live without besides
besides my own? I very much like the redirection plugin.
Okay.
I think it's critical on any site in order to plug those gaps, plug those holes, and find out what dead ends people are hitting. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. If for those that don't know, keep on point with your Google webmasters, make sure you're not getting any 404 errors, and get those pages redirected. A favorite WordPress or business book?
Business book would have to be The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It's critical reading if you're remotely considering doing your own thing, being an entrepreneur. It's critical. You have to get these principles in your brain from the outset. They're difficult, but they have to be done.
A quote you live or run your business by?
Fail a little every day, which is basically, you might not get everything done that you want to do, and you might not get it all done perfectly. But if you're giving it a shot and you're going for it, then at least you're getting part of the way. So fail a little every day. Don't worry about not getting it all done. Just get what you can done.
That's awesome. The best business or career advice you ever received?
Oh, that's a hard one. Probably that there's no such thing as job security. If you are in a job and you're thinking about doing your own thing or making your own stab at it, that job that you have probably isn't as secure as you think it is.
Yeah.
And the only way that you're ever going to get secure or get security is if you really make a good go at your own efforts, if you can.
Yeah.
Give it a shot. That job or another job will always be, or something like it, will probably always be there if you need to go back to it, but there is no such thing as job security.
I agree. The longest a client project has ever taken?
I'd say probably 2-3 months. They can go a bit long sometimes.
That's so far the longest running is 2 years. You're on the safe side.
That's all right then.
If you had to switch to another CMS, what would it be?
That's a good one. I don't know actually what I would do. Probably Joomla.
First answer. First Joomla answer on the record.
It's hard to know. That's a difficult one. Be a big transition.
Who should I interview next?
I would like to see an interview with Pat Flynn.
Yes.
Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income.
Yep.
Or even if you got one of the guys from Internet Business Mastery.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all good.
What's the one question that I didn't ask you that I should have?
What's after Warpit?
Yes, what is after Warpit?
We don't actually, we've always got ideas, more ideas than we've got time to implement. We started this beta project, FTP to Cloud, which allows you to FTP to Amazon S3 and Dropbox and stuff like that. That will probably be our next little mini project, if anything else. But so many ideas, it's hard to know. It's just hard to know.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's entrepreneur's dilemma. We don't know where we're going next.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. All right, Paul, this has been a great interview. Everyone, go check out Paul. Paul, plug away. Where can people find you on the web?
You can find our service at warpit.com. That'll soon be changing to icontrolwp.com, just so as you know. But warpit.com will always be. You can contact me. You can get me on my personal blog, paulgoodchild.net. You can contact me there. Or send a support question or grab me on the chat. I'm normally on the chat on the website. So always there. Always welcome any questions or any communication, whatever you want.
Awesome.
I'm there.
Awesome. Everyone go say thanks. Paul, thanks for joining.
Cool. Thanks for having me, man.